In this episode of Car Chats, we were lucky enough to go for a drive with Australian Wallabies legend and good human Michael Hooper. We discuss one of the most difficult moments in his life and how he now looks back on that moment as a gift in terms of what it taught him about himself and life. We also talk about Michael's incredible leadership philosophy, how he's worked through his not enoughness stories, and how he redefined success. Hope you enjoy the chat as much as I enjoyed taking him for a ride.
Oops.
Hey mate, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm good.
Yeah. I saw the Vic number plates. You drive this all the way up from Melbourne.
I did, just to go for a drive with you.
Jeez, I'm special, aren't I?
Yeah, I don't trust your New South Wales cars. So training today?
Yeah.
What did that consist of?
It's our big day today. So a Tuesday before a Saturday game. It's weights in the morning. It's some unit stuff. So afternoons, our big training blocks are probably 90 minutes on the field. Yeah, the legs are a little sore.
So
this afternoon.
Okay, so do you have ice bath recoveries or?
I'm actually into the Wim Hof stuff big time at the moment. Yeah, so.
Including the breathing?
Including the breathing. So I get up and I do the breathing in the morning, and then first thing I get in here, I do 5 minutes in the ice, which now it's getting winter, is getting progressively harder and harder.
Can we talk about that for a sec? Can we talk about Wim Hof and breathing? Because I had this hypothesis that as the human race, we've forgotten how to breathe, right? Because when you're born as babies, we breathe through our diaphragm, right? Which has 75% more oxygen. But when we become teenagers and we get pimples, or we think we've got a fit in, we start breathing through our lungs and that kind of fight or flight play. So talk to me about the work you do. I mean, yes, it has a high performance benefit, but I think it has a mental health benefit, right? In terms of just the connecting with ourselves, and so much happens, like in terms of getting the present state when we breathe. What's been your observations in the journey?
My observations, it's actually brought my attention to breathing in general. Like, so, you know, when you see a blue car, or you're about to buy a car, and then you see that car everywhere. All it's done, like, well, not all it's done, it's done a lot of good things. So I believe in, like, it's a small stress response that helps with, you know, daily stresses more, so you can deal with those better. But it's brought my attention to my breathing more. So say if something's happening in the day, or I think you've talked before about, you know, before you get up and do a talk, or before I've got to say something in a meeting, just regulating your breath. Oh, where's my breath at? Can I just take a slow inhalation? And, you know, what time am I sort of doing? And then you can just get yourself grounded on something that you can control.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's been the power in it for me. It's actually just brought my awareness to it. So in the practice of doing it in the morning, I see more of it throughout the day, which has been great.
I love that. It enables you to get more present as well.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
Got it. Your philosophy of life, obviously, your philosophy of leadership. You became Wallabies captain in 2014.
Yeah.
At the age of 22.
Yeah.
Youngest Wallabies captain in over 50 years. I don't know if you knew that. It was actually 57 years.
There you go.
And you've played over 100 tests for Australia. I want to talk about that and your perspective on leadership.
Yeah.
And your perspective on team. But I also want to talk to you about overcoming adversity and making sense of your story along the journey in terms of how you and I connected up way back when. So in terms of, I guess you can only join the dots looking back on your life and making sense of your life story. And I know you and I have had plenty of chats along this journey, making sense of your life story. Were there any kind of, I guess, crucible moments or good or bad, or certain people in your life that have kind of helped you to get to where you are today and kind of shaped who you are?
Yeah, for sure. I think the older you get, the more you realise how much you need other people in anything, just your general well-being or to succeed in your chosen craft or whatever it is. Like, other people are so important. For me, I had a great upbringing. Like, I had a very privileged upbringing, and my mum and dad were always around, cared, showed support for, you know, what I was interested in.
Yep.
Never forceful of anything, would challenge. My brother and I have an older brother who's 18 months older than me, but supportive and there on Saturday sport. And, you know, that for me was just such a great bedrock for what, you know, to say, go out there and do what you want to do. And then, you know, more recently is my wife, like, you know, and we've started a family, and, you know, how that just absolutely changes your world in, in amazing ways, both good and difficult. So, those three people. And then there's, you know, a myriad of other people out there. But there's, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like, they talk about a community to raise a child. Well, it's the same for, I think, people. Like, you need that community around you and find the right sort of mix of, you know, who can not help you, but just be there.
Totally.
You know, so... Yeah, I'd say those three.
Yeah, love that. How old's your son, is it?
Yeah, I've got... Yeah. So Thomas is still in that month, you know. It's like, I can't just say he's two yet. He's like 15 or 16 months, so it's...
Every month is a winner?
Yeah, every month. Yeah, it's a high five for me and Kate. And
got
then,
through another one?
Yeah, it's 2 months for our youngest daughter, Adelaide.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. So sleep is overrated at the moment?
Mum's taking the taking the battering of the sleep, so I'm in the spare room. So sleep's pretty important for everybody. You know, my wife as well, but she's taken the bullet for so I can, you know, go chase my dream in footy at the moment. So, you know, so appreciative of her. But yeah, it's a slog.
Totally, totally. The so the journey that you've been on, is the journey of being an athlete and a professional athlete, right? Representing your country, but also, I guess, the journey of being a human being as well. What have been some of the lessons you've learned about yourself along the journey that life doesn't really prepare you for, but you kind of just got to go through it and fall down and get up again or make mistakes and learn from them?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot there. Well, firstly, I'd say how I think the difference between what society thinks of success and failure and what it actually means.
Oh, I love this topic.
Yeah.
The definition of success.
Yeah, okay, so Australian rugby, really successful. Late 90s, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And for the large majority of the time that I've played rugby, there's been some success in there and been very lucky to be a part of that. But probably mostly, it's been some difficult years.
Mm.
So trying to separate yourself from, not separate yourself, but understanding the difference between what you can and can't control within that.
Totally.
And then what success actually means.
And probably in that, separating your self-worth from the results and
exactly.
So forth, the kind of the person and the persona. Yeah,
yeah, I can give you, you know, it's, you win a test match and okay, like Kate, my wife would always say, it's like a good time for her to ask for something, a gift or something, because she knows I'm in a good mood.
Well played, Kate.
Yeah,
one for Kate.
She's onto it, right? But conversely, it's like, okay, we lose a test match. And then it's like, okay, let's bunker down this weekend. You know?
Don't ask hoops for anything.
Yeah, let's bunker down. Let's not go out to a lunch, even if we've got the week off next week. And you know, let's just not show our face, but you know, get the win. And it's like, yeah, we're down to the main spot in Manly. Let's have a, you know, a nice arvo. And
isn't that crazy? It was the conditions that were determining your mindset and your attitude and so forth.
Yeah, no, totally.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, you know, wanting to win is, I think, great. Like, want to win.
It's the goal.
It's the goal, right? But then also, if that doesn't happen, what can we learn from that? And, you know, separating your self-worth, you're talking about.
Yeah, so playing rugby is what you do. It's not who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I think that's... Do you think that's probably one of the biggest issues that we get distracted by as professional athletes? Is separating, you know, the person from the persona, your identity, which you can't control, versus the human, which you can control.
Well, I think the difficulty is you don't even, it's not even intentional.
Yeah.
So I never saw myself or see myself as a rugby player, but like the story I just told you, I'm dictating my happiness, or not happiness, but you know, my mood and intention.
Attitude,
Attitude over a win or a loss.
Yeah.
So it is. So I did. And then through no intention. And I think that's the tricky thing. And why does that happen? I think about this a bit, but, you know, I'm not going to blame society, but, you know, your own self. Like, when things are good and, you go back to the lunch and people pat you on the back, you got to take that.
Mm.
And when it's not that way, you know, you've sort of got to ride the other the other end of the stick.
Yeah.
So
the recognition is good, or the adulation or the validation is good, but if it's to the detriment of just validating ourselves or recognizing ourselves or loving ourselves, that's where the distraction is.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I found myself in that, and You know, there's, you know, there's media and then there's socials and then there's, you know, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
That, you know, just compound that. So trying to manage that and navigate that in today's age as being like being a sports person is tricky.
Yeah, totally. So getting back to how we define success or how you define success within the remit of what you can control versus how society defines success, which is, well, how the media defines success, which is effectively winning and losing, right? But there's so many things in that you can't control. So if I was to ask you, how does Michael Hooper define success? What would you say?
Yeah, it's look, I want to be the best player I can be.
And that's 100% within your control. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I think I've found, even when you have a shocker, but I put everything in place into training, then, you know, it's still, okay, well, what can I improve? That's just natural and part and parcel of being an athlete. But you can kind of, you know, you get over it quicker because you know that the effort was there.
Totally. So, yeah, isn't that incredible when you sit back and you go, well, how do I measure my success? It's being the best player I can be, and then just applying that to different roles, being the best dad I can be the best husband or son or, you mean, friend I can be, which is 100% within your control. It doesn't really matter whether you get there or not because it's open to interpretation, right? But within your control, that's... And when you redefine success from that point of view and you eliminate all the noise, life's pretty liberating, yeah? That's pretty free.
I think so. And a real critical part I've found in that, and I get this wrong, is the perfection side of that battle as well. So, yeah, I want to be the best player I can be, or I want to be the best dad I can be. But some days I'm just not going to get there, you know?
Yeah.
Like maybe I miss a rep, or maybe I... you know, you do something at home that you don't want to. Maybe I sit on the computer too long or watch rather than do some chores, which probably doesn't add up to being the best dad I could be. I miss something.
Yeah.
That doesn't break it all. That doesn't like collapse the bridge, you know? And I was told a good analogy from a guy I really respect, but it's, you've got a wooden bridge and it's made up of little planks. The moment that the bridge is made up of one plank, and say for me, that could be rugby, and that's not going well at the moment, the whole bridge falls down. But the analogy he used is, okay, you're a brother, you're a father, you're a rugby player, yes, friend, son, all these things, a weekend warrior surfer, you know, is in there.
I'm in touch with that emotion.
Yeah. if one of those sort of pillars or planks is cracked or, you know, is rotting at that point in time, the bridge doesn't fall down.
Love that.
Yeah, and I thought that was really cool because... You know, like we've talked about, at times through no intention, the bridge is made up of being a rugby player. So then that then trickles home, and I, you know, I'm thinking about that more, and I'm not present at home, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know,
I love that. That means no one particular role defines you. You've got all these different roles and responsibilities and passions, right? And it's the sum of all those things. Yeah. So you don't, in terms of getting balance in your life, you're not consumed by one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that analogy.
And then coming back to, you know, failure is good. Like, if you can, like, perspective on things, I find, and this is a trick, is this hard for me to do, but the perspective on, you know, certain situations, if I can change my perspective from something being a negative to a positive, it changes the whole way I look at something. But that's again, a skill, like the breathing or anything like that.
Yeah, totally. Talk to me about, you know, you become... captain of the Wallabies in 2014 at the age of 22. You're the youngest captain in 50 years, or over 50 years. How did that go down? Did you have a philosophy of leadership at the time? Like, how did that evolve? Were you a natural leader and all of a sudden, geez, I gotta lead the Wallabies now?
So it happened through an injury.
Yeah.
So the captain who was going to be captain for the year hit his ACL, so he's out.
Yeah.
And yeah, through, there's a couple other injuries and through, yeah, I was sort of standing there, and yeah, I was ready to go, but no, I had no philosophy on leadership, no understanding of what type of leader I was or wanted to be or any of those things. So it was now I look back on it, really difficult position, but you don't know what you don't know.
Totally.
So it was a bit of a, okay, let's just wing it and see how we go. Now, the issue with my leadership style at the time was, it was, you turn up at training and you train as hard as you can, and then you play as hard as you can, and that's, it's straightforward. Yeah. But I was a 22-year-old bloke, not many, you know, outside distractions, didn't have them.
Yeah.
So how can I understand what a 30-year-old guy with a family needs, or some of his, you know, requirements within life? And
totally.
And it is a different ballpark. Like, it is a, you don't even, yeah, you're talking about a completely different set of values and understandings, and you're traveling overseas, and there's pressure of all these different things. So my understanding on, I'm thinking it's really straightforward for all of us, but it is far from, and you're dealing with people, which is the hardest thing. So I got a lot wrong, and a lot wrong, which was great. And in reflection, you can start to square those away. But yeah, it was hard. It was really hard because you don't know if what you're doing is right. You're not getting sort of any coaching or teaching if what you're doing is right or wrong. So it's a bit of a trial by fire, really. Yeah.
If you had your time again, knowing what you know now, what you've got wrong, what were some of the lessons over the journey that you've now learnt about leadership, which might be football, but also might be being a dad, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I would ask for help.
Yeah. Love that.
Number one, I would ask for help. So I had these great...
Don't be the loner.
Yeah, I had these great people reach out to me, like, you know, really experienced, awesome people in rugby saying, hey, if you ever need to talk about, you know, rugby or captaincy or leadership within your group, reach out to me. Now, I didn't reach out because I wanted to give off the impression that, now I've reflected on it, give off the impression that, now I've got this, you know, like always, you know, scared of being, you know, caught out or being a fraud or whatever it is. But no, mate, like, oh, really appreciate it. Yeah, mate, I'll get round to it. And you never get round to it because you're nervous that you'll get caught out and found that you just have no idea what you're doing, which was the case. So if I could go back in time, it would be that. Number one would be, okay, call that bloke, ask him, ask other guys, get feedback, want really good feedback from guys who are in and around you all the time. Yeah. And then probably second to that is, you can't do it all yourself, and you know, be authentic, so be yourself, but that means you've got deficiencies in other areas. So utilize the guys that are around you who will pick up what you're deficient at, and understand how to do that. And I didn't understand how to do that, or how I could be better at that, and how would I, because I never asked for help. So it's like, it's a cycle there.
Totally. But in your defense, you're 22 years old, right? So I mean, life doesn't prepare you to suddenly, because your whole life, chapter one of the hero's journey, it's all about us, right? It's all about you. You learn how to kick, you learn how to throw, you learn how to, we all learn a certain skill. I mean, and we work our asses off it, and then we achieve it, which makes us feel significant, but it's all about me. But when you become a leader, it's diametrically opposite. It's actually no longer about you and about creating an environment for others to be successful, right? But if we've never been taught those skills, I've learnt the craft of rugby, but the craft of leadership are almost, it's a completely different, you know, capability and skill set and mindset and attitude. And it's either by luck or design that we kind of, you know, we navigate our way through that. But no one in this world can do anything in this world on their own, right? We all need help. And so as an aha, that's a huge one, right? So, you know, ask for help and then get feedback. And then more importantly, critique, not criticize. Don't kind of berate ourselves along the way, which we're also very good at, right?
Yeah.
So.
And now let's take the foot off the pedal for a moment to let that sink in. If you're listening to this right now and thinking, you know what? I want to develop my own leadership philosophy, then simply download the MojoCo app and complete our Leadership Confidence short course. And now, back to the episode.
When you and I did some work together and we made sense of your story, don't know if you can't remember some of the, because part of it is letting go of certain stories, you know, that version of ourselves we, you know, thought I had to be the, you talk about perfectionism, I thought I had to prove myself to others. And when we unpack it, when we identify our not enoughnesses, they're everywhere. Like, you know, once I did it for myself, it was like not loved enough, not good enough, not smart enough, not good looking enough, and so forth. Do you remember what were some of the your versions of not enoughnesses that you had to let go of?
Ooh, yeah, there's a few there.
When people do it, they start with one and they end up with 101. So
yeah.
Unfortunately, you're not unique.
No, well, that's the thing, right? I think, I mean, you're not perfect, right? Let go of that.
So accept that I'm not perfect.
Yeah, accept that I'm not perfect. You're going to stuff up. Like I say to myself in the morning, I get up, it's like, I'm perfectly imperfect.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And that's the truth. It's like...
Yeah, but when you develop your acceptance list, right? So you're just accepting that you're not perfect. You're accepting that you're going to stuff up.
I've never been a part of the most successful team. Other people that have won more than me.
Yeah.
There's people who have played longer than me. All this sort of stuff.
You haven't achieved your goals yet.
Haven't achieved the goals. Will I ever achieve the goals? I'm running out of time. All this. I'm getting old. That type of thing. And letting go of all that stuff and changing the perspective on all that. It's like, no, you're not old. You're just experienced.
Totally.
And there's a new level of skill that you get in there. The list goes on, right?
I
want more time at home. I'm not present enough at home. Or what am I going to do after footy? You've got that identity of footy player is going to go like that. It's literally, you play my last game, it's gone.
Yeah, accepting that your career is not forever and you've got to think about a plan B. I guess the power of developing an acceptance list is that once you can identify all these things that are outside of your control, that you can start to identify, accept, acknowledge, then I guess the practice is actually letting them go,
Mm-mm.
Because if you don't, even for 1 second, that will cause the interference that can cause anxiety or stress or pressure or worry,
And I think the whole perfectionism thing, and one of the things that's sort of been a bit of a byproduct of going down this path, is that I kind of thought that I'll go down here and then all of a sudden I'll never have these thoughts again. The thoughts of, the not enoughness and everything like that, or...
Yep, silver bullet. I've got the answer.
I want that car. It's like, I shouldn't be material anymore. Why the hell am I thinking like that? And then beating myself up a little bit about it. But understanding that it's like the weather. I like the weather analogy when it comes to mindset. It's like, you can't have these beautiful days, like these autumn days at the moment, without some sort of big... storm front coming through, or the cold weather or rain coming through. That's just part of the cycle.
Totally.
And it's kind of like, I like to think it's kind of like us. You need that cycle. Someone that's like, if I was happy all the time, then I'm not happy, am I? That's just normal.
Yeah.
So it's actually that within the range of, but knowing that, when things are tough, then, what can I get from this moment? What does this moment need from me right now? And to have that awareness. And again, it's like, it's a constant work on a constant, growth, I think.
I love that. You've just tapped into two superpowers. One is appreciation and one is acceptance. You're appreciating the beautiful days and you're accepting the rainy days. And once you realize you've got the power to do both those things, right, you actually really, really enjoy and celebrate the sunny days. But it also means the shitty days don't have ownership over your attitude.
Mm.
You're choosing to accept it. I don't think we understand that acceptance muscle, whether it's accepting things for ourselves or accepting the reality. That's life-changing.
Mm.
Right? All of a sudden, there's so much freedom in that, right?
Yeah.
I think that one of the problems today, not just for athletes, but for everyone, is just we're not accepting things. We don't know what our uncontrollables are, what our distractions are, and therefore there's just so much interference going on in our perspective and our attitude to life. So, yeah. I think you're on a pretty good journey there. Yeah.
Oh, I'm enjoying it. I think.
Is it a trained muscle? You said you got to work at it, right? Do you work at it in an organized way, or in the morning for 5 minutes, or?
I do. In the morning, I get up, I do my breathing, and then, I try and have some intentional thinking, and that is along the lines of, so that I'm perfectly imperfect, and I'm we've talked about worthy and you're enough as is, without going and winning a footy game or playing for another 10 years or any right now. And that's going to be case in 10 years.
The human being is always is always going in this one direction.
Yeah, I get this borrowed time on earth. It's going to pass that on to someone else at some stage.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're one person or anything in that. So I do that. Then I have a little bit of a gratefulness practice, which I think is actually really good because I'm, like I said, I get to live in this beautiful place and I get to play footy and I've got a healthy family, so I'm very lucky.
So and gratitude's had a big part of your life.
Yeah, I feel great. Like when you actually think about those, when I think about those little things, I feel great.
Yeah,
which is a great way to start the day.
Yeah, totally.
And then I think about like who I am as a person and those things like happy, excited, safe, and loved. So we talked about the earliest memories and those were the things that were highlighted for me. So
what was your early happy memory again?
It was traveling with my family.
That's
so
right.
We went skiing in New Zealand when I was young. We did camper van trip.
Yep.
That was like a real vivid memory. I think I've got one or two before that, but like I can remember the feeling of that trip.
Yeah.
And that was all that, right? Like I was happy, like how good get to go skiing and, you're driving up these, feel like you could fall off the side of these mountains. That would seem like at the time. And then
adventurous, excited.
Yeah, excited and happy just being with family and like you're having fun there. And then safe, I was with my family.
Yeah.
And then loved, like we were a tight unit growing up. So
how powerful are those four words? And the incredible thing about what you've just said is Michael Hooper can show up today from that exact same place, right? You can just remind yourself, like literally as the morning mantra, I am happy, I am excited, I am free, I am safe, and I am loved, right? I think we forget as we get older, and we think we get pimples, we think we've got to fit into a tribe. We often forget that when you find these memories before the memories, the stories like your early happy memory, because in that memory, that little boy didn't have to do anything or achieve anything. He didn't need to be perfect, you know what I mean? He didn't have to be, he could just be happy, carefree, safe and loved.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty crazy.
It right? is, yeah, you're right. No, there's, say no more, you know?
So let's talk about overcoming adversity, because you've heard me say this before, your greatest growth comes from your darkest times, right? Mm. Greatest learnings come from your most difficult times, because I think three things happen. It's the most grounding chapter of your entire life, right? Because for a lot of us, we're on our knees. Secondly, it also taps into this incredible curiosity that, okay, how do I get through this? Who's going to help me? What am I learning about myself through this? And we often unlock our values, right? So what has been your observations and some of your adversities along the journey, and what are you learning about yourself through them?
Yeah, I think my most significant one was pulling out of the test match last year.
Yeah.
I was just overwhelmed. I was sort of experiencing things I hadn't experienced before. And I was scared, and rugby took a real back seat. But the trick with it was, or the hard thing about it was, I'd always been a certain type of player to, I think, myself and what others thought of me. And that was a player that always plays. Like I'd good run with injury, injuries in my career. And so I've been able to play a lot.
Yeah. That style of play that you're talking about, is that quite an aggressive style of?
I'm just out on the field, I'd had a good run.
Yeah.
So, pulling out for something that was, largely mental.
Yeah.
Would seem, it would seem like really hard, but for me it was an easy decision in the end because I wasn't in a good place to play and be with the team. But I think the stories I was telling myself were certainly around, in terms of the what would other people think if I do this? What would other people think if I do that? And it's a normal consideration to have, I guess. But that was taking up a lot of my energy. And I think why I got to that point was I was, a new dad. I wanted to be present and at home with my family.
Yeah.
And then I was playing a game that was putting myself in risk, injury risk.
Yeah.
And I was telling myself pretty much the story that something was going to happen soon.
Yeah.
And I was you start to tell yourself and you pick out, it's like confirmation bias. You start picking out all the things that you want to pick out and... You see a person walking with a shoulder sling down the street, and you're like, God, like, I want to hold my baby. I don't want to be in a sling. All those things started just adding up.
Yep.
And telling myself that even though I'd played a lot of games, that something was going to imminent to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so I was overwhelmed and anxious about playing and yeah.
It's so interesting that in different conditions, we tell ourselves different stories. We don't realize that the conditions have actually changed. Like, you've just become a dad, right? So you're not going to consciously identify that, you know, that's going to change your attitude in certain ways until it does.
Yeah.
And you find all these reasons to, you know, come and catastrophize that side of things. So
yeah, I was good at that. I was good at finding the worst thing that could possibly happen. Yeah.
Oh, we all are. Yeah. Right? Like, we're living through the most opinionated, judgmental and negative time in living history. So you don't have to look far outside for validation of negativity, right? So what happened? Okay, so you flew back from Argentina, was it?
Yep.
Yeah. And from memory, your family were in New Zealand at the time?
Yeah, my wife and my son were in New Zealand. So I had to, I flew home and I left home at 18, like went to Canberra for the Brumbies, 18.
Yeah.
I hadn't finished my high school certificate at the time. So I was, I didn't do that great in the school certificate because I was already in rugby mode, right?
Yeah. Fairly good excuse.
I thought, that's what I used anyway.
Yeah.
so I hadn't been really back at home since then. No. Nights here and there and whatnot, but I found myself like gone from 2 days prior, you know, I was captaining, about to lead the team into a test match in Argentina, to back in the bedroom that I grew up in with mum and dad.
Your single bedroom with all the old posters in the room.
It felt like that.
You must have seriously felt like you were cracking up.
Yeah.
That particular moment.
I did. I actually did have that was a funny moment within it all, because it's like, you know, I think a thing that I thought was, I didn't understand the whole, not mental health thing,
well,
but
just what was happening to you.
Didn't understand what was happening to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember just being there, just going, oh God, how have we ended up here? You know? But
that's funny.
As you've mentioned, I look at that time as one of the best things that happened to me in my life. You know, it's like having my kids, you know, marrying my wife and, you know, that thing.
Yeah, isn't that incredible? When Anna Mears broke her back, was told she was never going to ride again. And then she went on to break 18 world records, right?
Incredible.
She talks about that chapter as a blessing.
Mm.
Right? Ash Barty has a mental breakdown. She looks back on that time and she's grateful that it happened. And you just said the same thing. Why is that? Is because what it teaches you, what you learn from it, what's on the other side of that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I wouldn't advocate those times of fun. Like, yeah. You know, because totally. I think you can look. I can look back with rose-tinted glasses, but that's like hard. But like going out for a 10K run or something, it's going to be hard, but you're going to get this amazing kick from it in the back end. It's the same thing with that situation for myself. I know that it was hard, but then you get a little win somewhere along the line. You're like, I start, you know, get a little win about what some of the stuff we talk about, like, you know. My worth isn't derived from how I play or that sort of stuff, you know? And you're like, that's a different way of looking at it. That's a little win. And then you gain momentum and, you start to, dig into, I worked myself out a lot more and that's going to change again. Like, could something like that happen to me again? Yeah, probably could.
Yeah.
Might happen again. Yeah. But it's like you're shedding a skin, like a snake or something. You shed a skin and then you're on.
I love that. Like, I love that. Well, as soon as you accept it, it might happen again. It doesn't own you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, okay, Hoops, a big part, in my opinion anyway, a big part of your journey, as you've mentioned, is separating your self-worth from what you do.
Mm.
Right? Playing rugby is what you do, but it's not who you are, and you're connecting back with the human being, less so the human doing. So when you get up in the morning, and before you write your to-do list as a wallaby, what's on your to-be list? Like, what are the words that best describes what kind of human Michael Hoomer... what Michael Hooper wants to be? What kind of comes to mind?
I always want to grow. Yep. So I think my two sort of values, and the third isn't quite there yet because I'm not there yet, but
we can work on that
is to grow. I don't want to be stagnant.
Growing. Yep.
And I feel like, in whatever it is, want to grow, be open-minded, everything like that. The second is to respect myself and respect others.
Love that.
I can't respect others if I don't respect myself. So it's kind of like, I don't know, it seems sort of not selfish, but like, I'm still working through that one, because it's, if I respect myself and I'm authentically me, then that should impact, not impact, but other people then know what I'm about. And that's respecting others. And I think that's really important for me. I want to, you know, still, like I said, I'm still working through it.
I love that.
And then the last bit is I want to give back to, you know, others have been very privileged and learned a lot. So I want to give back. You know, I think just giving credit to yourself for a second, like I was in a pretty, you know, dark place, but I was struggling a bit. I had a 30-minute chat on the phone with you. You're on the way to a game or something like that, in a cab. And you, in that 30 minutes, you made a significant difference to my life.
Wow.
You know, like at that point in time, to rephrase that, and we, you know, spoken a lot since, like we talked about, but how can you do that in 30 minutes? Jeez, that's a good thing. That's a cool thing to be able to do. So, you know, I think where I'm at the moment, I've got, you know, family, but honestly, like, you know, it's a cool thing to see and to experience for myself. Wouldn't that be cool to do, have the shoe on the other foot?
And
if I could give that to someone, wow, that would be pretty rewarding as well.
I love that.
So that's, but right now I've got a young family, so I'm trying to balance my time.
No, you're just applying those words. I think you said, I want to be growing, I want to be respectful, and I want to be giving. At the moment, I'd argue your family needs that the most, especially two young kids and even Kate and chop out. You know what I mean? You're being respectful of them and your situation, but I love what you're, and by the way, growth and growing, that's one of the most important human needs. In fact, the three that you mentioned, two of them are linked in: the need for love and connection, the need for growth and learning, be more open, and the need for contribution, you know, for helping others, being contributing to something or someone beyond yourself. And you're doing that as a dad, you're also doing that as a wallaby and part of a team, you know, with this jingoistic love of the whole country is behind that, right? And if you can live your life that way, with a sense of... But I also love what you said about respecting yourself first. In my opinion, that's the hardest thing to do, to love ourselves first before we love others. Because we've constantly got that not enoughness story, you know, because our belief system got shaped from a young age because of the adulation. Right? And from a young age, you are high profile. And all the pats on the back and all the profile and all the publicity and so forth, it's pretty hard not to get caught up in perfectionism, which, by the way, is caring what others think about me and trying to live up to this perfect image. The worst thing happens is when you play well, right? Because then you've got to repeat that. Oh, my God. I got to do it. And that, you know, expectation of success, because everyone's expecting me to think, that just feeds on itself. And if we get distracted by that, which is pretty hard as a kid, right? No one says, by the way, Michael, you're not a rugby union player. You're a human being. Well, no one kind of says that. So you're left to navigate this dual existence on your own.
Yeah.
It's such a quirky place, the sports and entertainment industry. There are so many distractions that we can get caught up in. I love the fact that now that you're learning these lessons, though, you feel like you have almost like an obligation or a responsibility to pass it on to, you know, the young wallabies coming to the team.
Yeah, and that's a new learning thing for myself, because I don't want to be a preacher. And again, I was 22, and when I wasn't keen on asking for help. So, you know, how is it done in a way that, you know, it can be given to a 22 or 21 or 18 year old, and it, you know, so they never have to have that real big lull moment or that big bottom out moment. It can just be something that, you know, you start growing, like you grow your passing or your kicking game or anything like that. It just starts to develop, and maybe there's something that works for you or not. And, you know, so finding the balance is right. And, you know, that's, I guess the first thing that I can do is, you know, I'm doing it. And that's a good starting point, right?
Totally.
For others. So,
and has that changed now in terms of the seeing vulnerability as a strength inside a high performance team? Have you noticed a change over the journey where you're allowed to show your emotions and take your mask and armor off, and the storytelling and the imperfections that gets discussed more?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think so. And I think there's huge power in that. You know, I think it's like when you sort of get together as a team and you go, hey, I'm nervous about this game. Are you guys nervous? And everyone's like, yeah, I'm nervous. But you go, okay, well, how are we going to view these nerves? Nerves are like, nerves can be viewed two ways. And, you know, you can let them consume. You go, oh, I'm so nervous. Oh my God, what if I stuff up?
Yeah.
or the way that when you're really on, what do these nerves mean? It just means I'm ready to absolutely rip in. My body's telling me it's preparing me for a game and I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, try like view them like that. And, you know, I guess when I've heard other people say something like that, you're like, oh yeah, me too. You know, and then, okay, we're even more of a team now.
Totally. Just so you know, nerves in terms of anxiety and excitement are two sides of the exact same coin.
Mm.
If you're focusing on something you can't control, you'll be anxious. If you focus on the things you can control and the best version of you as a team, you'll be excited. Mm. That's the goal, to be excited before you perform and then relaxed when you're in you know, actually in the performance. Mm. And I think what people don't realize is that pressure as a construct in the mind doesn't actually exist unless we're focusing on shit we can't control.
Yeah.
I guarantee you'll feel pressure then, and anxiety and stress and pressure.
Mm.
So I think the understanding and the learning of that, but I love the fact that vulnerability has come back in high performance teams, because in my opinion anyway, authenticity, which is what you just talked about earlier, just being the best version of me and being true to me, vulnerability, connection, and then sharing our stories, the four ingredients that make up great teams. And especially if they're also purpose-driven, they have a higher purpose than just winning games of football, and they're values-based. And I think, in my opinion, your values are part of your superpowers. And then they have a performance culture. I think if you've got those three things, you're purpose-driven, values-based, and performance-focused, it still doesn't mean you'll win.
No.
But what it does mean is you bring the best version of you to the dance floor.
Mm.
And in my opinion, getting back to it, your definition of success is, I reckon that's it. You know, and then life just becomes this incredible adventure. So,
well, what more can you be other than yourself, right? But if you're your best self, then that's a good place to be.
Totally. And that's, I guess, that's the goal of the dream, I think. Yeah. Lastly for you, before I drop you back off at the at training, the your goals and dreams for the future. Yeah, are you big in setting dreams or goals for yourself?
Yeah, I am. I want to be a really good dad and husband, and
love that.
Yeah, be able to, you know, have a family that can have opportunity and you know, get what I was given, but you know, better maybe. I don't know. Like, I think that I want to be a good present dad and husband. And then in terms of myself, I don't want to be just the footy player.
Yeah.
So I want to reinvent myself in some way. I really idolize, but I think it's great when people do that.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's cool.
Yeah, yeah. That means it's just the next chapter and the next chapter and the next chapter. What about as a surfer? Do you have any dreams as a...
Oh, man, yeah. Like, I want to surf Chopu or something. No, I don't know.
I'll film you. I'm not going to go out with
you. Oh, my God. Can you imagine? No, I'll just get out and enjoy it. But I should have more time once I hang the boots up. So
there you go. There's a few years left.
Can we surf bells? I'd like to surf bells.
I'll definitely take you to bells surfing. That can be the when my shoulder's right, that can be on our date list.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much. Good luck for the year. And congratulations on all your success as a professional athlete. But as you define success, congratulations also on being the best version of you. You're on an exciting journey, and it's fun to be a part of it.
Yeah, thanks, Craig.